Safety First.
Welcome to a new episode of Safety First, TÜV Süd's podcast on cybersecurity and more. I'm Schleen Schürmann, and today I welcome another international guest from the cybersecurity community. Trust is a much-used term these days. Most people talk about building or strengthening it. Many companies see themselves as trusted advisors. Today we will talk about the opposite, about zero trust. This is a rather new and a vendor-agnostic concept for ensuring IT security. Our guest today is Mitko Vasilev. He describes himself as founder, owner, geek and technologist, and currently works at Microsoft in the areas of IoT, mixed reality and robotics. Hi Mitko, welcome to the show.
Hello, hi. Really happy to join you for that podcast.
Mitko, we are always being told that trust is so important. Everybody wants to build and strengthen trust. After all, it seems that in IT security, you better don't trust anyone. What is this zero trust concept all about?
It's mostly about changing the mindset in regards to your users or your resources or your data centers. Everything is on the internet. So basically, you should stop trusting by default. And you should always verify. Every single access attempt needs to get verified by multiple angles. It's not a technology. It's not a specific product. It's not a specific company providing it. It's a mind shift, which is actually now quite accelerated because of the COVID and the emergency for everyone to start working remote, obviously, from own laptops. Sometimes they have to borrow laptops, going on untrusted networks, home offices, sometimes coffee shops, if it's open. But everything got really accelerated over the past 6 months.
I think it's a very complex topic that we're talking about. So maybe we can find some kind of metaphor to explain it a little. Let's say I have a house and I don't have a front door with a lock. And everybody can enter, but there's a guy who follows everyone who comes in and looks at their behavior and judges, is this person from the family? Does he belong to the family? Or does this guy not belong to the family? And is he allowed to enter the bedroom, for example? Is that a good metaphor? Can we use that?
It's a scary metaphor.
It is.
Obviously, you don't want to let people, everyone to get in, but it happens in the real life because sometimes someone is getting on the corporate VPN and then he leaves his laptop open and then he just goes to pick up his coffee from the barista and spending there 15 minutes talking. And these 15 minutes, someone actually went to your bedroom if you have the traditional corporate IT. And that's actually a really good metaphor. Then with zero trust, you're going to get much more insights if that person should get allowed at that time. Maybe you're going to try a second way to validate that that's the specific person. You're going to give him a call just to see if he's going to pick up his phone, like a multi-factor authentication. Then you're also going to probably prohibit certain areas from your home, like bedrooms, etc., or give specific access. Maybe you want to meet the person in the bedroom, but then you really need to have that understanding from the beginning, understand the full path that person should take, and then either stop him or allow him to go into the bedroom.
So in our prep talk, we talked about some main principles of zero trust. Maybe we can define them a little.
Yes. What we have as main principles is actually that it's a process. First, we need to get used to that it's a process. We're accepting that everything we have today is getting on the internet, on the open internet. We're accepting that we need to actually start identifying our users by multiple ways, not just by username and password once, but rather start using multi-factor authentication methods. Then what we need to do is we also need to rethink maybe our networks. We need to make them into a smaller domains where we can contain once there is a breach. If someone hacks a specific resource, we really want to get him contained within a specific area. And then we have a contingency plan executing that plan probably automatically. So if we go step after step, is first is the identity. have a strong identity, multiple ways to validate it, have a containment mechanisms, actually to contain when there is a breach. Start understanding the devices, because today it's not the era of the corporate laptop anymore. Today is the era of bring your own device. So all these devices are part of the IT policy, a part of the way how people want to work, but still we need to be able to understand which are the managed devices, which are the unmanaged, understand the risk and compliance of using this kind of different devices. And then we have to automate the policy enforcement. I mean, if there is a breach, if there is an illegitimate access, we need to be able to stop it and then validate all the records.
So how does it work with all these services? Do these services and systems permanently watch what I'm doing and flag my uncommon behavior as potential security breach and ask for additional verification in that case then?
What we have is every single modern IT system has logs. Everyone is logging almost everything that the users do. Obviously, complying with all the GDPR requirements, if you're in Europe or in different regions. So the logs are there. The difference with Zero Trust is that we are actually looking on these logs as signals, and we want actually to build a mechanism and processes to get these signals from all these different places and start regulating. I mean, not based on yours as an individual, but based on your identity as a IT identity. And if that identity is, let's say, logging in Europe and you're expected to be in US, if that identity is trying to access the corporate payroll database at 3 a.m., and then all these things can trigger actually automated actions, stop the access, trigger the alarm, open a security breach ticket. So it's perfectly safe.
Yeah, perfectly safe, but I think everybody of us already had the situation where he or she was locked out of an account or service as a legitimate yes. user. What is the chance of false positives in a zero trust architecture?
It's a process. There is always the chance. And obviously, as the organization starts shifting and changing the way how you access the data, they have the applications, etc., there will be false positives. So it's not a switch. From today on, we have all our data labeled properly based on our specific taxonomy. And now we have all the applications secured. There is no such a switch. It takes time. In most cases, what we have, because Zero Trust is not new. I mean, it's more than decade old methodology. And then over the last 5 years started becoming a hype and everyone's becoming now Zero Trust compliant. So we've got enough learning and understanding of changing traditional corporate infrastructure to zero trust model to avoid all these false positives and bad experiences of getting you locked out from valid resources.
I was reading about the need to know principle, and it says that I can only see the information the system seems fitting for my purpose. Could it happen that on one instance I can and in the next I cannot use a certain resource? And what does it do to the productivity of every user?
I mean, there have been a number of studies actually of changing to more dynamic and automated model of granting access and also stopping the access. And on the productivity side, as soon as you stabilize the process, which typically takes between 1 year to 2 years, so 12 to 24 months. Everything should be as smooth as before when you hit, I mean, as a user experience, as before with the traditional firewalls and like traditional enterprise security. It's 1 to 2 years, let's say there could be glitches because it takes time, number of systems, also depends on the company because there are companies with hundreds of thousands of employees across different entities, then they're buying other companies through mergers and acquisitions, so it becomes even more complex. So typically it will be months of short disruption, but nothing catastrophic should happen to a company that actually decides to go to that path in 2020.
When we talk about this kind of tracking or tracing, I think we also have to talk about the privacy aspect. How much and what kind of usage data is needed to judge my common and uncommon behavior? And how are the data collected, processed, and stored?
The data is collected and processed and stored by the traditional ways of IT, the same way we are doing it for the last probably 25 years. Obviously, what changed over the past 5 years is that now we started actually collecting all these different sources in one place, and we started almost in real time understanding much better the behavior of a specific device or a specific identity. It's the same mechanisms, it's just now we look it in one place, so we have multiple signals to start deciding if it's a valid access or it's a malicious access. And also now we have much more tools to stop it automatically. I mean, we had the same tools 10 years ago. We were not just using them because at that time everyone was in the perspective that, okay, I have a corporate network, which is a safe place. I have a VPN to let my employees in, and whoever gets through that VPN is on the safe place. It's that person. That was like a couple of years ago. And then several of very kind of worldwide scale attacks and breaches back in 2009 actually changed the mindset of much more people in IT.
So, but what are the privacy aspects of this kind of data collection and AI using it permanently? Who has access? Who owns my behavioral data, like so much aggregated data? Mm-hmm. Do I have a kind of score, maybe, deep down buried in a system?
Oh, there is always a score, the so-called risk score. I mean, you have that risk score for the, for a decade within the IT systems. Nowadays, we obviously collect, as we said, multiple signals, so that risk score will be much more precise. In the past, it will be quite simple, let's say. Years ago, it was, you have antivirus on your Windows PC, so you can access the VPN. You don't have an antivirus on your Windows PC, you cannot access the VPN. That was like, let's say, 10 years ago. Nowadays, there will be much more signals based on that identity. Also, we can add multiple policies based on the types of files you want to access, as an example. So first, we are going to validate your identity, that the username and password, and then probably getting the credentials of an SMS, just to validate that it's you. Then we're going to double check the timing, the area where you're connecting. If it's, let's say, a coffee shop, then we're going to double check the equipment you have, if it's a trusted one, or you're maybe accessing it from a handheld device without the latest version with some third-party malicious software. And then we're going to double check the labels of the documents you want to access. And if it's strictly company confidential, then probably your access will be not allowed.
So it's like a 10-factor authentication.
I mean, it's a good point. It will be less 10-factor authentication. Obviously, you have 2-factor just to validate the easy stuff, the identity. And then you're going to have multiple ways actually to start double-checking if that identity is behaving based on the expectations or it's trying to attack.
As a company using a zero-trust architecture, am I confronted with a completely new dimension of privacy regulation also?
The privacy regulations are exactly the same, I mean, for all of the companies. And obviously, we need to keep them even with the zero-trust. It's, again, we use the same methods that traditional IT is using for decades. We are just automating them, and we are able to correlate much more signals into one decision. So nothing changed that drastically. If it's everyone who is compliant with GDPR can still use zero trust, it's the same mechanisms. It's much more, automation that we're going to add.
Okay, but it's loads of data collected, much more than with a normal, account name and password system.
I mean, even with an account name and password system, because I'm working in IT for now 21 years, even 20 years ago, we were still logging what was the behavior of VPN users. So effectively months after, if there isn't a breach, months after we'll be able to go back, let's say 6 months in the past, and double check that user, he went and accessed specific server at that time, etc. But let's say then we would have 6 months in between the time of the attacker breaching in and then starting investigating, opening a ticket and trying to understand and kind of contain. So we have the same logging mechanisms today, but much more automated, and we are able to near real time actually to understand that there is a breach and contain the attacker within that specific area that he managed to break in.
What is the potential of misuse? It sounds like the techniques at play here would also generally work well as a mass surveillance and a new kind of behavioral profiling.
It's typically zero trust in a modern network is going to work on a very low level types of understanding you and building your profile. So it's not going to go to the full level of, let's say, modern streaming services to really go into understand your behavior and start building kind of everything that you see based on your profile. No, that's not the plan. Obviously, it has all the automation tools. It's going to understand a lot of your typical work behavior, but it's not going to go beyond that.
So let's look into the future, Mikko. From your point of view, how long will it take until the zero trust concept is established more commonly as the standard?
I mean, everyone was expecting that it will take probably a decade until zero trust is get established, because many of the established companies, they still had the office networks. They had the employees that either need to be inside the office or over the VPN and then get the access, because that was the way how they were expecting was the modus operandi. And obviously, lately after the lockdown, suddenly all these companies had to take tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people to work remote from home or remote locations. So basically, zero trust at the moment is the hottest topic ever, because that's the most cost-efficient and fast way of moving to a secure, remote-first type of enterprise, where obviously the people are going to go back to the office in the future, but still you're going to have vast majority of the people working remote, working from co-working spaces or working from their home or coffee shop. And they need to be productive. They obviously have to access also corporate resources with higher security. So zero trust is the most efficient and fast way to transition.
And today, what are the most common obstacles and inhibition thresholds for a broader application in organizations?
So at the moment, I think the only obstacle is time. Because many of these companies, they have tens or hundreds of thousands of employees. So migrating them and start labeling, let's say, the documents, so you know you have label taxon, what type of access should be granted and applications. It's just the time to migrate to zero trust. I don't think there is a modern enterprise today which does not kind of move into that direction. Some of them already shifted. They've got learnings, there is a lot of information, and some of them are shifting. I'm constantly meeting companies for 100 years, and they have been successful in 95 of these 100 years. They always grew the business. So they're always asking, why should we change? And then suddenly everyone has to work from home for 6 months, and not everyone has a VPN, or someone gets on the VPN and he stays there for like a couple of days, always on, laptop is open, left unattended. So even these companies start understanding that, okay, now we need to redefine how we're using the equipment that we have today and how we can shift fast to a more agile method of collaboration.
So the homeschooling kids don't mess with the data.
Yes, you have no idea. I mean, there was a study how many homeschooling kids were using actually work laptops of their parents, because simply you don't have enough equipment, and there was no possibility actually to buy equipment for a certain time. So when you had to homeschool kids, many of the parents had actually to give away their work laptops so the kids can use whatever collaboration tool they use for remote schooling. And all these kids like sitting on all that majority of information.
Metko, thank you a lot for all these insights. And but before you leave, we have one more question about yourself.
Sure.
In your LinkedIn profile, you describe yourself, already said it, as a founder, owner, geek, and technologist.
Yes.
Currently, you work as a technologist for Microsoft in the field of IoT, mixed reality, and robotics. Before that, among other things, you were CTO at Cisco IoT Innovation Center Germany, Open Berlin.
Yes.
That sounds quite interesting and exciting. Can you tell us a little bit more about your journey in the IT industry?
I mean, it started again 20 years ago. First, I started working for an oil company, actually. At that time, it was a Wild West. So we had to buy satellite hubs. They were buying banks. So we had to connect all of them, like really dynamic times. Then I joined Cisco for 13 years. Then back in 2013, we had a dinner in Berlin with my manager at that time. And he told me, you know, we should open Internet of Things Innovation Center for the German manufacturing. Do you want to make it? And said, yes, let's do it. And then the next day I had to explain my wife that we're moving to Berlin. She was not in Berlin before that. So she had to visit Berlin after I have agreed that we're moving there to open the innovation center. Then we went to Berlin. We picked a really nice factory in Schöneberg, in the URF campus. Completely remodeled the factory. We have installed all the IoT sensors inside, actually build a full proof point that you can have a cloud-enabled building from day one, smart building. Not a single light switch on the walls, fully controlled for the cloud. It's the next level of zero trust where you have also the physical environment actually following the people, understanding their preferences and also giving them access. All the doors with face recognition, so you don't need a badge. Obviously, zero trust network. Everyone within the same system. So it was really exciting. Then I left Cisco to build a startup, to build that fully automated building also for others. It was too early. The market was not ready. So after 2 years, I had to close the startup. I was doing a little bit of freelance work across Africa and Asia and helping Internet of Things companies to do interesting stuff or traditional companies to go and do Internet of Things. And then Microsoft called me one Saturday. I was in Greece. And, hey, do you know, are you interested to join Microsoft for Internet of Things team for Europe, Middle East, and Africa? I said, yes. And a couple of weeks after, I also joined Microsoft.
Are you still thinking about the startup? Maybe now is the time?
Maybe now is not the time because I still have a lot of startup founders. And we have all the discussions in regards to the market at the moment, how tough it is. Obviously, if you grow the business, you need to have venture capital, which is becoming even tougher. So maybe it's not the right time, but definitely whenever we go through the current economical crisis, there will be a strong jump. And then I think there will be much more demand for this innovative, very efficient ways of working. So it will be, again, time for some exciting business, a startup, a spin-off, or even why not the big corporate can also decide to build new digital units to do interesting stuff.
So thank you again very much, Mikko. It was very interesting listening to you.
Thank you.
You will find all our episodes at tuvsud.com/podcast. That is tuvsud.com/podcast. You can listen and subscribe to Safety First not only on our website, but also on many podcatchers. Thanks for listening, and of course, stay well and safe. Safety First is produced by TÜV Süd, editorial support and audio production by Ikone Media.